of Palestine in South Africa. Can I, before Ambassador starts, remind members that we will have the questions and engagements and clarity and so on subsequently after the ambassador's briefing. Well, we might not want to hear those reports at this time. thank you very much. yeah. Okay, thank you, Excellency. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I would like to just thank you very much for having invited me, for inviting me to come once again to this beautiful city. I like Cape Town very much. I've been visiting Cape Town since 1990, long before the changes in South Africa. I was a neighboring, I used to be posted in Zimbabwe, and I had two opportunities to come to Cape Town. And, it's a beautiful place, beautiful people, and I hope we will be able to have a useful discussion this morning. It is indeed an honor for me to be present with so many familiar faces this morning here and interact with them and discuss issues of mutual concern. I think the Middle East and Palestine is an area which is important for all of us, and what is happening or whatever is happening in the Middle East, as you all know, affects the entire world, and South Africa is part of this international community and has a role to play on international issues, and this is because of that we are in South Africa as Palestinians. I was hoping and that my dear colleague, the Israeli ambassador, could have been sitting on my left or my right so we can really together discuss our mutual issues and concerns, because in my view this is the only way forward if we wanted to resolve the problems in the Middle East. You know, it is us Palestinians and Israelis, with the help of the international community of course, we can produce something which will be you know, useful for all of us, but I hope in the future we'll have this opportunity. But the issue today is the topic is the bid to join the United Nations, and I'm going to say something about it, although in my mind when Mr. Chairman spoke to me about coming here, I thought I will just widen the discussion to speak on issues also related to what the everybody is expecting, negotiations between us and Israel, the reconciliation between among the Palestinian organizations, in particular Hamas and Fatah, the two major political organizations in Palestine, which in my view have now reached an important stage in reconciling reconciliation and resolving all their issues. But Mr. Chairman, I would like to start by, if you don't mind, because I was not expecting some presentations from some of my colleagues who were sitting behind me. I thought it's a question of presentation to the members of the committee, but I realized there was this presentation which took me some time to take note of it, because this is going to take very long time to respond to each one of them, although the last speaker, Mr. Hirsch, was very harsh little bit with me on us, although for a professional journalist should be more reasonable in accommodating other views. You know, yes, I understand his background, where he comes from, but Palestine is a reality. The Palestinians are a people entitled to live in their own country. They found themselves fortunately in that part of the world too, like the Israelis, and we are not going to leave that part of the world, and entertain any ideology, or you know, and then say we are Ugandans or we come from Australia. No, we are from there, and we're going to remain there until the end of this world. You know, so my children were born in Zimbabwe, because I was posted in Zimbabwe. But when you ask my son Ahmed and Noura, my daughter, where you come from, they tell you we are from Palestine, a Palestinian. And where in Palestine, will tell you in Tarshiha, which is in historic Palestine, in Israel, north of Israel of today, which they had the opportunity in 1995 to go and visit. And this is something great, you know. So the question of is Palestinians should not have a state, should not have this, should not Judea, Samaria, West Bank, you know. Let's forget about these old-fashioned expressions and be more creative and build something for the future. Let's be more optimistic, not pessimistic. Let's forget about the past and build something for the future. The right for the Palestinian people to join the UN is something natural. It's historical. It is legal. All nations have the right for sovereign self-determination. They have the right to have their own full freedom, independence. And they should not be anymore. People are looking for freedom. We are the only nation on this earth now still under occupation. Nobody brought word of occupation from my colleagues who made the presentation. You know, when you speak as a Christian, there's a big number of Palestinians are Christians. Jesus Christ was born, and I always say that, was born in Palestine, in Bethlehem. And he is the first Palestinian. We are proud of that. Our country belongs to all those Christians, Jews, and Muslims. It's not it doesn't belong exclusively for one religion. No. And it will never be. So we wanted to build on this new vision for a new region in the Middle East. If we think of the past, listen, who can guarantee who was in Uganda 5,000 years at that time? Or in Seychelles or Mauritius or somewhere else. So he can come today and claim this is mine. It's not that man who lives there now. We have to be reasonable with ourselves, not with others first. Let's think in a way where we acknowledge each other. The Palestinians in 1988, 15 of November, declared the independent state of Palestine. And today, for those colleagues of mine who don't know, there's 128 independent states, sovereign states recognize Palestine as a state. And by this, by itself, this will give you the right to go to the UN and ask for a membership, because membership, full membership. And they will all support us. Why do we forget the fact of 181 resolution, which has called for two states, one for Israel and one for the Arab community? Yes, indeed, it took 63 years for the Palestinian to realize that it has happened now. All right. If it was me, I was born then that time, I would have accepted it. If my parents refused it for any reason, I don't know. They both died. But today, I'm prepared to accept Israel as a neighbor of mine, which possibly some of my good colleagues in the Jewish community say, Amin Husseini Sheikh refused Hajj Amin Husseini. Yes, possibly he has his own reasons that time. But I'm telling you now, we are prepared to sit and talk and negotiate and put something new for our future. My children need to live peacefully. They want to live in their own country, in a country that belongs to them. They don't want to remain refugees. They have to have their own country. It's exactly like the Israelis who think that they have a right of their own country. How can you accept yours and deny others? The UN bid is something historic. It is, it's overdue, in fact. It's really overdue. And if we go to the United Nations and see and count the number of the states who support that, and we count them one by one now, because it's a better that we have been involved with unfortunately one or two countries who are opposing it for certain reasons. We have countries who recognize Palestine more than Israel. So this bid for the United Nations is something, it's a legitimate exercise which the Palestinians are involved in. And we will continue for it. We are not going to abandon it. The issue is a matter of time. It may take, because there are certain powerful countries are trying to use pressure against some countries not to vote. We need 9 out of the 15. We have 8. Possibly the 9 is coming. And I, on a personal level, I consider it a diplomatic battle. We are going to continue to push for it. We started like that as Palestinians. There's nothing wrong with it. When we carried the armed struggle, the gun to fight for it, we waited more or less from 1948 until 1965. Waiting the international community to implement certain resolutions for the Palestinians to go back to their homes or to be uncompensated. Nothing has happened. So in a case like that, you are obliged to carry the gun, something which is enshrined in the United Nations resolution convention. People have fought for their country. We are not the only ones. South Africans have fought, Mozambicans have fought, Zimbabweans, Vietnamese, Algerians, Americans themselves have fought, used arms to liberate their own country. We're not strangers. Now we are telling them, all right, we left this gun, let us sit guys and talk. We have reached to a stage where we think we can decide on a negotiating table, a solution which will be acceptable for both of us. We are not, nobody wants to dictate on the other. Also, if somebody thinks we are dictating, also we don't accept Israel to dictate on us. We don't accept Mr. Obama to dictate on us. You know, America is a big country, can destroy the whole world. But as a human beings, we have dignity, we have honor, we have peace-loving people. We will not allow America to dictate on us, please do this. No, it's not possible. My interest as a Palestinian to live side by side with Israel in two-state solution. This is something which has the support of the international community. It has the support even of Hillary Clinton. She talks a lot about it. Although she don't have much capacity to do it, I don't know why, but she, at least Obama can do it. I don't know why he's not doing it. And enough is enough. We talk about negotiations. In negotiations, you South Africans, as one of the colleagues said it rightly, that you are a model in a way. You have done it. You went to Kodesa, you negotiated with your partners for peace, and you have made a historic achievement by creating South Africa of today. We wanted to emulate that ourselves. And we are seeking your help and assistance and advice on the matter. And really, we seek your advice. And someone has also mentioned that he wants to invite you to Palestine and Israel. It is a very welcome initiative. Just take it. If he invites me with you, I will go. We go and see for ourselves on the ground what is happening in the Palestinian territories every day. I would love you to form a delegation and go to Israel first and then cross over to the West Bank. and go to Gaza too. See how settlement is mushrooming and being built in the heart of the Palestinian land at the expense of the indigenous Palestinian people. Poor Palestinian farmers are being, you know, their homes being demolished, their farms are being destroyed, their olive trees are being uprooted. You know how historic is an olive tree? It can live so far. Go and see how those settlers are cutting this. You see it on television. Is that reconciliation? Is that peace? Is that stability? And someone, he talks about Hamas rockets. Where is Hamas? It's not Hamas. It's not attacking anybody. It has declared actual to the contrary. Ceasefire. And for over a year, Hamas has never attacked Israel. And if those think Hamas is, it's not true. Hamas is working with the Fatah and with other Palestinian organizations toward a strong reconciliation so we can have a common political position confronting our challenges towards continued occupation of the Palestinian land by Israel. Hamas and Fatah are meeting regularly. Let's stop talking about the differences. We have no more yes, it is a difficult exercise, I have to admit. But it is coming on beautifully. People are meeting. And I can assure you, within a very short period, there will be a summit between President Mahmoud Abbas and Khalid Mishal, head of Hamas, in Cairo. And the Egyptian and many Arab countries are helping in this process, including South Africa, promoting this kind of unity and reconciliation between the Palestinian political organization. And those who are feeling sad about it, they talk about it because they are disappointed. They don't want to see that reconciliation happening because it's not in the interest of Israel. Israel wanted to see all those Palestinians fighting each other. And we'll come to tell Israel, we have had enough, the Francis, we are going to be united. It's a matter of time. Our situation is not an easy one. But we are reconciling, we are uniting our efforts. Towards what? Not towards destroying Israel, towards making peace in the Middle East, towards achieving political stability, towards achieving the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination and have a full independent sovereign state of Palestine on the West Bank, Gaza, with East Jerusalem as its capital, inshallah. And Jerusalem issue, ladies and gentlemen, it's an important issue for us Palestinians. You know how much it involves emotions for Israelis and the Jews? Yes, we appreciate that. But also it's important for Christians and Muslims. And they should have, Jerusalem should have a solution which will satisfy everybody. And we are prepared to talk about it with the Israelis. But what we are not prepared to talk to Mr. Netanyahu and his government about is a state which he himself designing, making the borders, saying I wanted to have a military base in the Jordanian Valley because I feel the security of Iran. But I'm a bit worried about Iran. He used to be always worried about Gaddafi. Gaddafi is in heaven now. Also, I don't know. Salah is in heaven. You know? Now, Gaddafi is in is no more. I don't know. Assad, you know, in Syria there is problems. I hope it will be resolved nicely and peacefully. People should not feel the Arabs' spray. It's to the contrary. This Arab Spring is important, you know. And Israel, if it's feeling Arab Spring, that they're making a big mistake. The Israelis should have, on the other side, in the Arab world, strong people to live side by side, people who are honest, people have dignity, people have honor and respect their own words and what they mean. They don't need to see stooges in the Arab world. belong to certain, they collaborate with countries. No, they should have a real people living side by side with them. And let them start with the Palestinians. If they don't allow a Palestinian independent state to be established today, Israel will regret in the long future, honestly. And I feel for the Israelis myself. I can tell you openly, I'm not hiding. I meet Israelis. Because I strongly believe that by talking to an Israeli, you are able to communicate and open a dialogue and discuss with an Israeli. It's the way forward to solve the problem. I use an expression, it's easy to shoot someone and kill. Bye-bye. Like Gaddafi. But shouting, it's important to sit on a negotiating round table and shout at each other, Israelis, Palestinians, until we reach a solution. This is also not an easy exercise. God has created brains for us. Why do we have to shoot all the time at each other when we are able to sit on a round table and shout at each other and talk until we reach a solution? And I strongly, on a personal level, believe on it myself. And I hope on the other side we have people who think in the same manner. And the time has come for us to understand that only through negotiations, but negotiations should not be imposed on others. I mean, how can we talk about negotiations when those massive settlements of Jewish settlements are being built in the heart of the West Bank? In East Jerusalem, just yesterday or last week, 1,100 units of settlements were announced by the Israeli government in Jerusalem. And Israeli Prime Minister say Jerusalem is out of question. It is an Israeli territory, and we have the right to build or not to build. Nobody can come and talk to us about it. It's not possible. And it's not going to be possible, I can tell you. No Palestinian leader will accept that East Jerusalem will be an Israeli, part of the future Israeli state, full stop. No leader. Arafat could not make it, and the Camp David negotiation collapsed because of that. And President Mahmoud Abbas has made it clear that East Jerusalem is a territory which was captured in 1967 war. It's like the West Bank, like Gaza, like the other, and it has to be returned to the Palestinians. Building settlements in the West Bank and poor Palestinians, they don't have proper accommodation. Is that justice? Is that fairness? You go and see those beautiful Jewish settlements being built all over the West Bank on a beautiful hilly places, and see next to these settlements how Palestinian villages, they don't have a proper sewage system, they don't have proper running clean water. Is that what we talk about? Freedom, justice? It's not true. You wanted Mr. Netanyahu a demilitarized state of Palestine. He decides that the Palestinian state should be demilitarized. We should not have military. And he has all the military of this world. He has nuclear bombs. He can hit any part of this world, Netanyahu. And we poor Palestinians, we should have little wooden guns with police. Wooden guns. Just show that you are having a gun to discipline your own people. But if somebody attacks me from the other side, I say, oh, sorry, I don't have a gun to shoot at you. I should not have a control of my sky. If South African president, hopefully when Palestine is liberated, decided to pay a state visit to Palestine, he can't have his own private jet to fly into Palestinian airport. He should take a permission from Tel Aviv or from somewhere in Israel that this plane should land in a Palestinian territory. A permission from Israel. Is that a sovereign state? They wanted a state which is controlled by remote control from Tel Aviv or in Israel. It's not possible. No Palestinian will accept it. My Zimbabwean children will not accept it. Why? Why you have all the power of this world and we should not have, we cannot control ourselves in a decent and civilized manner? We're not interested in destroying Israel. We're saying, let's make peace. But security for you, yes, it's important, but also security is important for us. My children also are dear for me. My people are dear for me. If I don't take care of my children, my nation, I lose my respect as a leader. I lose their respect. You should maintain and provide all the security of this world to provide your own people and maintain, but for us, no. We shouldn't have. That is not justice, and it's not going to happen. We tell Netanyahu it is not going to happen. If you wanted really peace and real, genuine security, you should have a proper Palestinian state live side by side next to you. And we can make business with you. When I say business, not only selling and buying commodities. We can interact as people, as a human being. We can make good use of that piece of land. It's a beautiful piece of land, Palestine, Israel. I hope for those people who never visited to visit. And I'll be happy to organize, like my good colleague said, help you in visiting both Israel and Palestine. And I think it will be good to have a visit by all political parties of this parliament and go to Palestine. And see. Let me say something about negotiations, which I have said. We are committed to the negotiations, but on a mutual respect. Not negotiations which is going to be dictated by one side. Yes, the quartet, we respect all the quartet. It's strange that someone was talking about the quartet, we don't respect. If one statement was issued by the quartet recently and we felt it's not, we are not happy about it, we shouldn't express ourselves. They say, yes, whatever Mr. Blair wants, we should blindly say yes. No. Blair is not a god. Obama is not a god. European Union are not also saints. If you issue a statement, it should be based on realities and should be based on mutual respect, and you should not discriminate between one side and the other, yes. And they talk about United Nations resolutions. Israel is the only country which was created by UN resolution. And it's the only country in this world never respected any United Nations resolution. Let's be honest about it. I can bring them for you and count them one by one. The question of reconciliation, sisters and brothers, I can assure you from the information which I receive in my office that serious consideration is being taken in order to put an end to these differences between Fatah and Hamas. Countries are involved in helping both Palestinians to put an end to these differences and unite as one movement, which is really the time has come for it. And I know a signature was already put on a paper which called the Egyptian paper sometime before. And leaders of Fatah and Hamas are meeting in different places. Sometimes publicly, sometimes not. And both organizations are very keen in bringing an end to these differences. And I hope in the near future a government of national unity will be formed. It should have been formed by October, by this month. Possibly there was a delay. But the old days is no more. No more fighting among ourselves. And hopefully the West Bank and Gaza will reunite. We have one territory. We don't have both governments, one in Gaza and one in Ramallah. And those who like to hear about having government in Ramallah and one in Gaza, they're going to be very disappointed very soon. Very disappointed. They get very angry, but what can I do? But the Palestinians are going to unite. Our issues are not easy. We have complicated issues, you know. If I wanted to move from Ramallah into Gaza, unfortunately still Israel controls that. So Israel is not only responsible, they take part of the responsibility for this division, but I'm sure in the near future there will be a decision to form a new government, Mr. Chairman. Definitely, it's happening. On the other front, we have normalized most of our relations with the Arab world. And to move into the heart of the world, the UN, is going to happen very soon. We're going to have a full membership of the United Nations. And that step is not a unilateral. It's to the contrary. And it's going to consolidate and strengthen peace in the Middle East. If the Palestinians become members like Israel in the United Nations, that will give us that kind of equality. Why not? Yes, the territory is still under occupation, but we were not the first one. Many countries have joined the UN. It took some time. I can give you Japan, I can give you Taiwan, I can give you the Vatican. We are not the only ones. But it happens, and we have the support of the international community. And someone mentioned that Hamas and Fatah are not in agreement of that. It's not true. Actually, to the contrary, President Mahmoud Abbas received a written letter from Khaled Mashhad congratulating him for the speech he delivered at the United Nations on behalf of the Palestinian people, which I have distributed. I hope everybody got a copy. Yeah. And actually, that even has diffused a little bit the tension between both. When Abbas was in New York, Hamas welcomed the whole initiative. Those who think they don't agree, it's not true, I can assure you. And on my level, in this country, there is many individuals who are pro-Hamas actually phoned me on a personal level to congratulate me for the statement which was made by President Mahmoud Abbas at the UN. And it was welcomed by everybody, strangely only by some Israelis and one or two countries like the United States. But the world has welcomed it. And we are moving forward. We are moving forward towards establishing permanent political settlement in the Middle East. Negotiations should be based on two things now, and we will not accept to return to these negotiations based on only Netanyahu's suggestions. You cannot continue to build settlements and talk about a Palestinian viable independent state. We are building the state on the land. When the land is being confiscated and taken, and Jewish settlements are being built in the heart of this land. So what is the meaning of state? Do you build a state on the land or on the sky? You know? So if you take the land and say, yes, we wanted you to build a state. Okay, stop building those, taking this land, so we can build our state. And it has to be based on United Nations Resolution 242 and 338. And 1967 borders. Yes, if Israelis, for security reason, and I'll put it, for a certain reason, they wanted to swap some land. They wanted this if they give the same quality, the same quantity from Israel, we can. Countries who fought wars in Eastern Europe and in the world, they adjusted their borders at one time in order to bring to have final settlement and peace. But you can't take and don't give. Take, and then give nothing. Maybe something which I missed, Mr. Sherman, before I close my remarks. I didn't speak about this swap of prisoners, which has happened for recently between Hamas and the Israeli government. It is a major political and national achievement which has taken place in the Palestinian land. We all support that. Every single war prisoner is important to be released, either he's an Israeli or a Palestinian. We are happy to see Gilad Shalit is going to his family, safe, nicely dressed, nice glasses, and he put some weight also. Although many of our prisoners lost weight and had no clothes to wear, and they were subjected to all the most inhuman treatment, sorry to say that. But at least they are free and they are back in their.
Let me question our guests. The ambassador is a representative of a country and should be accorded the respect as he is the representative of the president of that country, and as such represents that country in our country. But more than that, accord the ambassador the respect as somebody who's giving us a briefing, such as you did. We cannot have some remarks and some gestures and some. I've noted these throughout the presentation of the ambassador. I thought they would subside. That is why I did not intervene earlier. But please, you have been given an opportunity. I did not hear any remarks or gestures or wing. So please accord the same respect that you were given. This is, after all, a meeting of the Portfolio Committee on International Relations. So this is a meeting of Parliament. Accord the same respect to this institution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, I can end my remarks here. Thank you.
Thank you very much on that bitter note. Honorable members, we have had briefings from the various organizations and from Ambassador Halime. It is now an opportunity for you to engage questions, clarity, comments, and whatever. However, let me caution. This is a meeting of the Portfolio Committee. So what I will not allow is dialogue between the presenters and the members of the Portfolio Committee. Because this is a meeting of the committee, it is the right of the members of the committee to debate issues amongst themselves as members. So please let us just be sensitive to those limitations in terms of how we can engage as members, but also as people who have presented to the committee. Honorable members, it's open to you now for interrogation, or if you wish. I've noted Honorable Dudley. Any other honorable? Honorable Dudley.
Thank you. Thank you, Ambassador. Your expressed desire for peace and a reasonable approach is very encouraging. Thank you. In your understanding, does Israel experience Hamas's ceasefire the way you do? And are the threats and attacks on Israel that they experience imagined? And if you think they are, how would you see that benefiting Israel? And then to either Mr. Wilkin, Mr. Hirsch, or even the president of the Zionist Federation, what is your take on the threat posed by Iran and the Hamas ceasefire? And has Israel been under attack in this period, and what are the relative details there? Again, to the same people, either President of the Zionist Federation, Mr. Wilkin, Mr. Hirsch, what is your response in sort of regard to the fairness of living conditions of Palestinians as opposed to Israelis? Ambassador mentioned the unfairness in terms of living conditions, and he also brought up the issue of military means and an unfairness there, and I really would like your comment to put that into perspective from another side. And then just lastly, what is your response to suggestions that talks are not based on mutual respect but dictated by Israel? If we could get a feedback on that, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I just want to get from what the Ambassador and maybe any one of the presenters who presented first. I just want to find out, would both sides agree to the fact that any settlement should be based on, okay, negotiation, fine, but also on the return to the 1967 borders? I want to know, both sides, would they accept that the 1967 borders be restored before an agreement is reached, and in terms of the creation of the state of Palestine and also the state of Israel? Thank you.
Okay, let me just highlight this. Remember, or members must recall, some questions cannot really be posed to the presenters here, as they are not the government of Israel. I'm just saying that raise the issues, but try to discern which should actually be posed to the Israeli ambassador, who unfortunately is not here. So if you wish, what we will do perhaps from our side, from the table, is to note the questions that should be directed to the Israeli government per se. So can we, to the extent that we can, stick to what has been presented thus far? Thank you, Honorable September.
Thank you very much. And indeed, thank you for the for all the presentations. I think it does help the portfolio committee, I would imagine, to bring very many different people before this committee to hear the views of everyone on this matter. We accept it's a highly emotional issue, and it's a choice that we make to respond in that same emotional manner, or to respond with the reality that requires both the Palestinian people and the Israeli people to have lasting peace. I do, however, think, Chair, that notwithstanding the fact that the ambassador of Israel is not here, I do think it will help, Chair, with your permission. There were a number of statements accorded to the South African government and the South African government positions taken. And I think it will only be fair that the committee gives an opportunity to the government to respond to those, which I would say, unfortunate explosive issues that were raised here. So I do think, Chair, that must be taken into consideration. And again, there's a choice. And the committee can respond line by line to the issues that were raised, or we choose another path. But, you know, I want to say, Chair, the first thing is this is a historical meeting, because the two parties have agreed in this room on one thing. And that in itself must be historical. Both parties agreed that this committee should undertake a trip. So I think that's very historical that we managed to get an agreement out of both parties here. The second one, Chair, again, the you know, what role can this committee play in assisting a lasting peace for both is important. So I welcome the ambassador's approach that let's look forward and let's not look back. Because if we look back, then the member is right. You'll go back to 1967. You'll go back to 1948. You'll go back to the positions that the United Nations in any event has taken then, and one don't understand then, and maybe the answer should be given. But why, it's not the first time that this matter lands up at the United Nations. Why is there a problem now that it is being called, you know, people are being forced into a decision when the United Nations took decisions that time already on that question? And that decision goes back very, very many years. You know, there are things like the Peel Commission that were there. There were things like the special committee that the United Nations has had. So I don't understand, and maybe that should be clarified in the presentations that were given to us, why now is there a difference in the approach? But in the same time, the answer should be given. Do we not agree that our multilateral institutions must play a role? What is the role of the United Nations when there's conflict? We all agree the role of the United Nations is not to say go and bomb. The United Nations, the role of the United Nations must make sure that, and the Security Council indeed, that peace must reign on this earth, as difficult as it sounds. So I would want to be clarified why. I also would want to be clarified by the Honourable Ambassador. What is the package taken that would be taken to the table for peace? And equally so to all the other presenters that spoke about the promotion of talks. What is that package in your view that you can put to this committee that would be the package for lasting peace? Because it's not a package just for talks. It should be a package for lasting peace. And equally, sir, if you can clarify, if both of you can clarify, last year there was a meeting held between Israel and Palestine, hosted by the United States. And there was a particular agreement that was reached there, and by September, President Netanyahu did not honor that agreement. Can you clarify that for us also? Because by the 28th of September, there was still difficulty with this agreement. But, you know, we can delve into who is united and who is not. The truth is that somebody from Israel also went to the UN, gave a particular statement. It wasn't a statement supported by Israel. We can call that's also disunity, but I mean that's not our intention to do that, because that's not going to be very helpful. So I think that if those issues could be clarified to us, it will be very helpful. As I said, Chair, it will be good if the South African government be given an opportunity to respond to those issues that were given here against the government in another presentation to ourselves. Because I think some of the issues that were put here, especially on the ANC side, I do not think that all of them are correct and the paths that we have chosen. We equally, as the ANC, went to the United Nations. We equally had support from very many different quarters, both internally and externally, to say that peace must come to the South African people. I do not think it is right to say that what will we do if the Western Cape decide that it wants to have a separate state. it's not the right to say that because it doesn't help the cause. We will rebut that by saying, but there was history in South Africa already when the then Babuta Tswana and all these other homelands that we have, we wouldn't like to go into who created them and who supported them. And that's why we're saying, you know, if you want to go back into history, it's big emotions that will come out. And those emotions, is not a, it will not help the South African cause where we are at. And to use the Western Cape, it's not helpful, you know. It's not helpful to say how the government will respond to that. That's where we came from. We were all separate in this country. I was separate. I had to go and buy bread around the corner in my own place. I had to sit upstairs in a bus in my own country. So let's not go there and make those kind of remarks. So, Chairperson, I trust if some clarification could be given to us on some of those things, and particularly the historicalness of why you think you can't go back to those attempts that have been made since that time already, because over and over many agreements have been made, over and over many, many decisions have been taken on this issue. No emotions will bring peace. What will bring peace is that, you know, we look at an honest path forward to bring peace to the people of Palestine, to the women, to the children, and to the men out there that deserve it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Any other questions, clarity? Okay, none. Shall I hand over to the representatives? There have been specific questions. Can I? Okay, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Dave Wilken from the International Christian Embassy. Let me start off with the question from the Honorable Member Dudley. Regarding the fairness and living in Israel, I've just returned from Israel. Obviously, the International Christian Embassy has got ties and relationships with all the peoples of the Middle East. And I had the privilege of visiting Abu Ghosh near Mefaseret Zion, an Arab town with beautiful facilities, beautiful restaurants. We used to go there every second night. And there is a wonderful response and a friendship between the Israelis living in Mefaseret Zion and surrounding areas as well as from Abu Ghosh. We have many Palestinians serving on the International Christian Embassy. So what I want to say, if we could extend that relationship that is in existence in very many of these areas, that would be the answer for the future Palestine. What encouraged me very much as well this morning, listening to the Honorable Ambassador of the Palestinians, when he said very clearly that they are prepared to accept Israel as a neighboring state and then to prepare to negotiate and find a final agreement. If that can be made, as was in the past, very clear and a public statement. And then I want to get back to our own CODESA agreement that we negotiated in the 1990s. Chairman, we worked on that basis of identifying the issues on which there was agreement, and the issues that were disagreed on would be taken into other working committees and finding solutions. And I'm not saying for one minute that the Palestinians or the Israelis or the United Nations has not done that yet, but it just comes to mind that is very important in conflict resolution, finding answers to these serious disputes and political issues. So I think South Africa has got an important role there, just to go back to CODESA and put it on the table to assist these negotiating countries there. There is definitely, Honorable Member Dudley, there is a mutual respect between the Israelis and the Palestinians. I've seen it because I've been in teams with them. The Palestinians that have got shops, etc., in the old city, our people were encouraged to go there, to buy there, to interact with these people, as well as in the Israeli city itself of Jerusalem. And that was wonderful to see. And I made use of many Palestinian taxis and visitations in Ramallah. Ramallah is a beautiful place. If you go and look at the economic growth in those areas, it's astounding. I would think it's a very high GDP rate that is applied in Ramallah. Gaza, because of the bit of war that they've had and the rockets that have been fired, that has caused a lot of tension there. The other honourable member, remember, speaking about the 1967 boundaries, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Chairman. That is for the political masters and of the countries to deal with that issue. I won't comment on that one. And the borders of requirement. And as I said, South Africa can play a major role in contributing towards that. The United Nations, yes, you're quite right, is a body and is a strong mechanism to resolve conflict. And I think perhaps they just need a bit of... Many nations on the United Nations are nations that have been in existence for the last 500 years, maybe not have the same conflict that we other nations, upcoming nations, have had in the world. And I think you've got a strong, not only a duty, but you've got a strong position to contribute to this conflict. Then I would also like to say, the only lasting peace, honourable member over there, for the situation, if there's a strong commitment and acknowledgement between the two states that they accept each other's positions as independent sovereign states. Once that is said, there's already a connection. Then they can talk about airspace and boundaries and reallocation of land or whatever the case might be. And let's hope when the independent Palestinian state is announced that people that are living in those areas may remain living there. Those that are living in Israel may continue living there. That it will be on that mutual understanding and mutual respect. It's the only issue that will hold it together. The other issues that have been raised here, Chairman, I think that is with respect also to our own government, the Palestinian people, the Israeli people, and the other nations, to take those resolutions from a political perspective. But I will close in saying I strongly recommend the CODESA agreement and the birth of South Africa. That is a beautiful document to use. Let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's go that route. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can I... Okay, you're noted, sir. The BBC is busy today. It's trying to poach some of our members from the meeting. Oh, they're last-minute lobbying. I want to throw two, three questions in. Unfortunately, you've just... responded, so you'll miss out on this opportunity. It's not necessarily directed to you, though. This analogy with the Western Cape. You see, firstly, this analogy misses the point that the Western Cape is a province of this country, and as such, has no bearing on independence. There's absolutely no way. So, I mean, it's like your child declaring that his room, is independent from the rest of your household. It's so illogical. It simply doesn't make sense. In fact, there isn't even space for that in our constitution. South Africa is a united country. There are no territorial issues, territorial disputes. Orania. No, Orania is a privately owned piece of land, you see. So it's very different. So I'm saying, so this analogy, I think, misses that point. Perhaps just a comment. I would like to hear what you have to say about it. When I'm finished, okay, you'll get the opportunity now. And as such cannot be used as a basis to say, but therefore South Africa cannot support, I'm saying as a basis. Secondly, contention, the assertion that the African National Congress was a client of the United Soviet Socialist Republic. Now, again, perhaps just a quick comment about it. You see, the ANC has never been a client of anybody. Never. The Cold War dynamics and the values, in fact, that the Socialist Republic espoused and their preparedness to support the oppressed peoples of this world when the West refused to do so led to that relationship between the USSR. Now, they may have had their grand design, Cold War ambitions and so, because remember, this was also a game between the USSR and the US for global dominance. So there were these interests at play, but to deduce therefore that the ANC was a client of the USSR is to me illogical and is a distortion of history at the least. And then the question that I want to pose to the other presenters here is, do you recognize that the Palestinians have the inalienable right to self-determination? Do you accept, do you recognize that, yes or no? You don't have to expand. Just give us that answer. And then the issue of settlement construction, which in one document was pointed out as being the nonsensical assertion that it complicates or it makes a solution impossible, does it recognize that that it is a fundamental issue to any peace process that may ensue following this? That the issue of settlement construction cannot be, dealt with in isolation in terms of the peace process. That it is fundamental to the peace process. Then, lastly, there's the assertion made in this document. I don't know whose document is it. Okay. There's the assertion made on page 10 that if the vote is not passed, it will complicate the process of negotiations even furthermore, since there might be a greater reluctance on the part of the Palestinians to negotiate. And it also says that if it so happens that this vote is not passed, enmity between Palestinians and Israelis could grow. Now, please explain to us how you reach that conclusion. When 8 people apply for recognition for statehood at the United Nations, would then somehow increase the enmity between the two peoples? Now, because my understanding is this application is not an act of war, it's a diplomatic approach at the United Nations. And then finally, on page 9, I think, the assertion is made, or the point it is made there, that Hamas outlawed by a number of legal entities throughout the world. Now, does it recognize in any event that Palestinians have voted for Hamas in a democratic and free election declared as such by the whole world? And as such, whatever peace process can only be sustainable if Hamas is a part of it. I'm saying, does it take that into cognizance? Because to cry that, this organization is illegal you know, and as such, we cannot engage with it is one thing. But if it becomes, if it is such a critical component to the peace process, can you harden, have hardened attitudes and decide to exclude it? What are the chances of that peace process being sustainable and all-inclusive? So those are just some of the questions that, as you respond, you might want to respond to. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I thank you. I'd like to deal with the Honourable Member of Parliament, Sherilyn Dudley, first. There is
Please don't deal with honourable members.
Sorry, what?
No, it's fine. You didn't catch it.
No, I'm not dealing with it in that sense. I deal with the questions. Sorry. These things can be fun sometimes. Huh? If I may first say that the subject of this meeting, from the invitation, is quite clear that it says that we would deal with a Palestinian bid for membership of the United Nations. There are so many side issues that have been raised, and most of the other speakers did not deal with that subject per se. They dealt with the independence application, but the issue goes around the application that they have made for either full or non-member status of the United Nations, which I try to speak to. The Honourable Dudley has asked, and if I may say so, with due respect to the Palestinian ambassador, who I have known for a little while, he is a very kind and gentle man, but he also did not speak to the subject at all. The questions, if you would help me as we go along, you want to know what are the dangers posed by Hamas and Iran. Hamas is a client of Iran. That is not a matter of debate. That is just a fact. They supply them with weapons and other such things. Iran has been on record almost daily in terms of its desire to wipe Israel from the state, from the map of the world, and has been most belligerent in this. Hamas is as with Hezbollah, they are both surrogates and clients of Iran. Apropos living conditions in the areas, it varies as Bishop's Court, Sea Point, Milnerton varies from the various suburbs on the Cape Flats, from Khayelitsha to Athlone and various other areas. We can go through the whole list and you get a variation of that, but I can tell you that there are houses there that are owned by Arabs, and if you took up the invitation that I've extended to you, you will see the magnificence of some of the houses, as you will see poverty in other areas. But in terms of living conditions, it has been the policy of the Israeli government to develop the economy of the Palestinian state, particularly the West Bank. And they have shown, I don't know the exact percentages, but they have shown 7-8 annual growth in the economy, and they seem to be doing quite well there. Of course, they are hugely subsidized by the Western world, and only about 20% from the oil-rich Palestinian states supports them. Only 20% of their budget comes from the oil-rich Arab states. I didn't understand the question about military means. If you would like to repeat that, what was the question?
It was just in response to the ambassador's submission, and he was speaking about what you've just addressed in terms of the disparities and living conditions, and he also spoke about the disparity in terms of military means.
You know, there are realities on the ground, and it's for the area and the various parties there to sort it out. There are also agreements in terms of Oslo, as we've discussed, and often they are respected in the breach by certainly the Palestinians, and there might be issues on Israel, but I'm not aware of them. The question was ask ourselves, are the talks dictated by Israel? Absolutely not. Israel does not dictate the things. All that she is saying is come and talk. The agenda is open, and the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, has actually said that quite clearly. Apropos the 67 borders, it's not for us to really comment about this. There is a United Nations Resolution 242 after the 67 war, which should be taken into account, and the parties will take it into account. It does not require that the parties go back to the 67 war and 67 borders, but that they will negotiate on this, and this is what I think Israel has been quite clear about, and they're willing to do. They have made many offers to the previous president of the PLO, Yasser Arafat, which he rejected at Camp David. I think it was in the year 2000, and there are many other such like meetings. What was the question, ma'am, if I may ask you? You asked me, what was the difference between the positions of the parties? Oh, I understand now. It was the positions because of previous agreements. Why can't they go back to previous agreements? Well, if they would stick to the agreements and build from there, there are agreements. But as has been clearly stated, that if the Palestinians declare UDI, this would be clearly against the Oslo agreement that both parties signed. Apropos your comment about my analogy, let me explain. I gave you a hypothetical. It was just an imaginary hypothetical analogy, an example. I could have taken any other and used another country if necessary. It had nothing to do with reality. It was an imaginary example apropos the Western Cape. And Mr. Chairman, I hope you will understand it in that context and read what I wrote carefully, and you will see that I actually qualified it by saying a hypothetical analogy. As far as talks are concerned, I think the Israeli government has been open to negotiations. The Palestinian authority has put obstacles in the way. If it's not one thing, then it's another. The ambassador spoke about President Obama of the United States. It was he who brought up the idea of stopping of building in the West Bank area, and this was in fact complied with for 10 months as stated and agreed at the time, and at no stage during that time did the Palestinian Authority approach Israel to take up this gesture on its part and start negotiations. This continues. In the recent United Nations speeches, President Abbas of the PLO, of the PA, the Palestinian Authority, also markedly spoke about Israel and spoke as the ambassador did, and the ambassador's a little bit mistaken in terms of referring to Jesus Christ as the first Palestinian, because historically this is not so, because the name Palestine was only imposed by the Romans 70 AD, 70 years after his death.
Just hold a second. Can I call you to order?
Sure.
Okay. I want to avoid a dialogue between you. So every time that anybody says something and the other responds, that will inevitably lead to dialogue. The dialogue is supposed to be taking place among the members of the committee themselves.
Okay, there were a number of other questions I'm willing to answer. As far as Hamas is concerned, because that was brought up, Hamas has clearly stated that it wants the destruction of the State of Israel. If the Palestinians and the Hamas can come to some sort of agreement amongst themselves and then jointly sit and negotiate with Israel with the intent to make peace, to achieve what both sides would like, and live in peace with each other, that would be a wonderful thing. But then the Hamas would have to drop its charter and its stated desire for the destruction of Israel. Let me point out again that the issue at this meeting is the Palestinian bid for membership of the United Nations, and that, Mr. Chairman, is really what we should be discussing.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Anilis, is it Wilkin?
Yeah, Mr. Hirsch.
No. Mr. Hirsch. Is it? No. This was Mr. Hirsch. Mr. Peterson. No? Yeah. Please.
Mr. Chairman, the question concerning the fragile relationship between Israel and the Palestinians, which could further fracture it since the bid for a unilateral declaration of Palestinian state arose as a heart of Palestinian people. The question was asked, if the vote is not passed, would it complicate the process? What we mean here is that the current situation is very fragile, and the expectations on a grassroots level is very high. If the resolution will not pass, it could create a hardened position between the two parties as a result of a possible weakening of the security situation. Okay. And the second question was about Hamas, which is outlawed by a number of legal entities. It is so that Hamas is a security risk, and rockets is fired from Gaza on a regular basis. If it's not Hamas, it is other entities from Gaza. That means that Hamas is not in control of those entities. That poses a real threat to Israel.
Okay, thank you very much. The last one will be Ambassador.
There's so many issues were raised, you know. I want to summarize the whole thing. I fully agree that this discussion should be concentrated on issues related to the bid by the Palestinians to join the United Nations. And I think I have answered this question when I said it is indeed historic as a natural right of the Palestinians as a nation, as a people, to seek membership of the United Nations, and we have declared, as I said, the state in 1988 on the 15th of November, which is recognized until today by 128 countries. And joining the UN is basically to strengthen the peace process which we have been involved with Israel for the last 20 years. It's not aimed at any time to delegitimize the state of Israel. What we are trying to achieve is to have a similar position of the state of Israel. And I see no reason why the Palestinians cannot have a seat at the United Nations if the international community is supporting that. It is, as I said earlier, a diplomatic and political exercise, a legitimate one, which we have been trying to achieve ourselves, and I think we have the support of the United Nations, the international community about it. But I want to emphasize and make it clear that our intention is not to also to avoid negotiations with the state of Israel. The minute the whole exercise finishes, when the UN votes for it, we are ready immediately for negotiations. But these negotiations has to be based on the United Nations resolutions 242338. It has to be based on stopping the settlement which Israel is continued to build in the heart of the Palestinian land. I've mentioned that this land is shrinking day after day, and it's not possible to continue to go and continue this negotiation while Israel continue to announce building this settlement and taking action in building these settlements. Go and see how Jerusalem is being now. The geographic dimension of the entire city has changed. The geographic and the demographic dimension of it. Go and see the West Bank. Now it's not something easy we are talking about. Something dangerous is happening inside Palestine. Building settlements according to international law is illegal and has to be stopped immediately if negotiations have to continue. If we wanted to build a state of Palestine on the West Bank, these Jewish settlements have to be stopped. It's contrary to international law and legitimacy. It contradicts of all the agreements which we have signed with the State of Israel. And we'd like this committee to really consider issuing something substantive in relation to these settlements and call for Israel, if really, to stop this building of this settlement. It's important for South Africa to identify itself with this particular issue, because settlements means no state of Palestine is going to happen. We're not going to build a state, as I said earlier, on the sky. And Mr. Netanyahu himself announced that he will not like to see a state in the West Bank. The way we look at it, the way the international community itself looks at it. It's not me who's saying that. Go back to the recent statement made by Netanyahu after President Mahmoud Abbas' statement at the UN. In relation, I want to mention something. People are talking about Hamas being... Hamas is part of the political landscape of Palestine. It's, as the chairman has said earlier, that it was elected by the Palestinian people. And it was accepted by the international community. And we had difficulties ourselves, yes, indeed, I have to admit. But now Hamas has taken major political decisions for the last couple of years. And there is no rockets coming into Israel for some time from any of the Palestinian organizations in Gaza. We have to stop this rhetoric saying Hamas is attacking, Hamas is attacking. There is nothing like that. Actually, if we really need to promote peace and political stability in the Palestinians, we should encourage unity among the Palestinians. And there are serious attempts. Serious discussion is taking place between the major political parties, Hamas and Fatah, today. And I'm aware of it. South Africa is involved in this exercise through its political and diplomatic channels. So we shouldn't deny these facts. We shouldn't avoid it. It's important to talk about it if you wanted to build political stability in that region. Hamas is not a terrorist organization. Fatah was called a terrorist organization. Yasser Arafat, after even he signed all the agreements with the State of Israel, was always called a terrorist. Today, I read a statement this morning by the foreign minister of the State of Israel, Mr. Lieberman, saying that Mahmoud Abbas is a dangerous man and he should be removed. He should be removed completely from power. This is Mahmoud Abbas, the man who is known to be liberal, accommodating. The man has always spoke about negotiations with Israel. A man who say, I never believe in violence and military confrontation. I need dialogue, I need engagement, I need to talk to the Israelis. Now, Lieberman himself, this morning, if you open the newspaper, go into the internet, say, Mahmoud Abbas, he is an obstacle facing peace. He should be removed from power. Who is the one then who don't want peace? And you talk, we shouldn't talk about a state before we're having negotiations. building state is part of these negotiations, what we are saying. What is wrong with that? State of Israel was established by a UN resolution, which has also called for the establishment of another one for the Palestinians. And this is what we are seeking to achieve ourselves. What we need today is for both parties to recognize the fact, the one fact, that through only negotiation we can establish permanent peace and settlement in the Middle East. Netanyahu, if he thinks of his own way of negotiations, it's his own problem. He is the one who is dictating on us the negotiation. He's the one putting terms of into this negotiation, say it should be 1, 2, 3, 4. We are telling him, no, it should be based on United Nations resolutions 242 or 338, and will not accept less than full independent state on Palestine and the Palestinian territory, with each Jerusalem as its capital. And if there is any kind of security concern for Israel, we are prepared to deal with it and talk with the Israelis about it. This is what we have today. And thank you.
Thank you very much, Excellency. Honorable members, I will allow for remarks, last remarks on your part. None. There's a Honorable Dudley.
Thank you. Thank you for today, and we look forward to when the Israeli ambassador is here, and we hope that the Palestinian ambassador will come back again at that stage. Just to say that obviously this meeting didn't appear in the parliamentary, either the PMG or the parliamentary site. So our meetings are of this nature. It will be important from a transparency point of view to have to make sure that they are in there. And then also just knowing that the Israeli ambassador will need prior warning. So although the month of November has been mentioned, once we have an exact date, if we can just make sure we give them time to be able to present themselves as they what they need to, that will be much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable, welcome, Baba. Thank you. Floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me apologize for being late to all in the meeting here, including our guests. I was also held up in a Chief Whip's forum, which I couldn't leave until now. But now I don't know if I'm correct. Judging from what I hear from Honorable Dudley, is there anybody representing the Israeli views? I think the last meeting we did ask for views from different parties. Is there anyone doing that? Oh, there is. Oh, okay.
Baba, do you want me to respond?
No, yes, he says they are there.
Okay. Yes, except for the Israeli embassy. No, the Israeli embassy, except for them. I have explained. I'll explain to you after the meeting, Bob, if you don't mind. They could not be here today.
Okay. No, then it always going to make it difficult again, you know, to go back to some of the questions we raised last time. So I'll leave those and simply go into what I think may be relevant at this point. This is called a unilateral declaration of independence by the Palestinians. I'm not quite sure, in the first point, if the UN says no, I heard that the implications might be the low morale within the Palestinian settlements, and also the lowering of the security. So it means that the hope of the Palestinian people at this point in time is pinned on whether the UN is going to say yes, not. If it says no, then there are these implications that I hear from you. Let me continue, Ambassador. And then if the UN says no, or if the UN says yes, then we also see the threat from the part of the United States that they may withdraw financial support from the UN. What would be the situation then if the UN says yes and the US then withdraws its financial support from the UN, including whatever they are giving to the Palestinian Authority? Again, if the UN says yes, but then it puts different parameters and terms away from the 1967 terms, puts new terms, what is the Palestinian Authority going to say? They say, yes, we recognize the state of Israel, but here are the new terms and the parameters. And these parameters are not congruent with the 1967 borders that you're talking about. What is going to be the response then at that point? Now, this issue of Hamas, I think we've been avoiding it for quite a long time. I don't know how you people are going to handle it in the long run. Because I remember when we visited your country a few years ago, we also went to Syria, to Damascus, where we also met the Khalid, I think it's Khalid, yes, it was the, yes, and we also met President Abbas in his quarters where President Arafat used to stay. This question of Palestinian unity, they all said no, they want to work together, but they had different views about the negotiations. Now my question would be, if the UN says yes, will there be a seat for Hamas around the negotiating table? Because this issue of denouncing Israel as an independent state or existing state is also a very thorny one. But I remember in 1985, President Arafat did come out clearly that they do recognize Israel state existing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. I will allow the ambassador to respond to those specific questions. Thank you, Ambassador.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Thank you, Chairman. I'll be brief also. Regarding our bid to join the UN, we have mentioned it in several occasions. It's a political and a diplomatic exercise which we have been involved with. If we, for any reason, fail at this particular time, we are going to try again. And my leadership has mentioned that, my president has said it, and we are determined to continue. It's a political struggle, my dear brother. And if we fail today, we'll try again. And this is the nature of our struggle. In diplomacy, sometimes you are not necessarily you achieve all your objectives. You try yourself, because if that is called diplomacy, it's a political attempt to strengthen your position within the United Nations, to seek the help of the international community. It means a lot for us and for our people to be full member of the United Nations. I can't talk about it, but I know the time factor. But when the United States say we will withdraw funding the United Nations if the UN accepts Palestine as a full member, it's an unfortunate situation. I cannot tell the United States what to do and what not to do. We just applied for the UNESCO membership. And I heard Hillary Clinton on television say, we will withdraw funding the UNESCO if they accept Palestine. I mean, this kind of political intimidation, it has not helped the international community. Actually, it's to the contrary. If we join the UN, we join the United, the UNESCO, it helps the Palestinians to strengthen and their well-being as a people, as a nation. What is wrong if we become a member of the UNESCO, where our people in refugee camps, in the diaspora, in the West Bank and Gaza, benefited out of this education system for the sake of promoting humanity, good and well-being, some science, technology, education for our people? Where is the problem? What is wrong with that? I mean, but the problem, it is the United States, and they take decisions themselves. And I think, I hope they will change their mind. Now, if we, answering specifically in relation to the UN, if we fail this time, we'll try again. We're going to continue to try. Concerning the unity, you were not present when I spoke earlier, dear colleague, that we are working hard as both organizations, Fatah and Hamas, to consolidate our common position. And I hope Hamas will join Fatah and the Palestinian Authority and the PLO politically to have one united delegation to go and negotiate for future political settlement in the Middle East. This is the whole objective of talking to each other in order to reach a common position in relation to political, economical, and other issues related to our people's future. When Mahmoud Abbas talks to Khaled Mashal, they talk about unity, about the well-being of the Palestinian people, how we overcome our own problems, how we can end this tragedy of the Palestinian people and bring political and permanent peace to the region. And I think Hamas is interested in political settlement. And when we say we have different views, this is something natural. In one family, you have one from Fatah, one from Hamas, one from the Democratic Front for the Liberation of what, and this and this. What can we do? This is our society. My younger brother, who was killed unfortunately in Lebanon, he was committed to a particular political organization. And I was the PLO representative since 1978 in Dar es Salaam. He's telling me, if you continue with this road, you will never achieve your objective. And those who killed him, they belong to the same political school of thought, unfortunately. So, but we are united to achieve our final objectives, free Palestine. Live side by side with Israel. That is the whole objective. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Ambassador. Honorable members, we have sadly come to the end of our meeting. May I perhaps just say that I have noted the omissions from some of our presenters not to respond, I think, to the fundamental questions that relate to their posture towards these issues. And the one was the issue of settlement construction and the issue of what I called the inalienable right of Palestinians to freedom and self-determination. It will be one of the questions I think we will pose to the Israeli ambassador as part of the other questions that we're going to hold over for them. I think there has been a request now by almost everybody since the previous engagement that this committee visit Palestine and Israel, do an inspection in loco, see for ourselves the situation on the ground, the living conditions, the security concerns, the and all the other, at least some of the other issues. I will pose this question, this request to the committee when we begin to deliberate on the issues as a committee following all the other engagements, including that of the Israeli ambassador, when we must resolve on something as a committee. I think it's one of the questions we will then deal with. Now, let me make two comments on two issues. One is, you see, we must always be careful to brand people terrorists, put labels. And our own South African experience tells us, former President Mandela was branded terrorist number one. Today, and Bishop and the Archbishop Tutu and others were branded terrorists. Today, President Mandela is the global icon. He's an icon for everybody in the world. But there is also some level of short-sightedness in labeling people, because it immediately, becomes an obstacle not to engage with that person because he or she is in a particular camp, carries this particular label, and as such, it makes engagement difficult. There should never be a reason for people not to talk. Let there be disagreement about the substantive issues themselves, but the principle that there must be engagement between these two people to eventually reach a solution, that's the one thing. And once you put people in boxes, it becomes perfect excuses not to engage, to preclude them from any so it's a bit short-sighted, I think everybody must take progressive steps to avoid that kind of thing. Now, the ANC, which also happens to be my party, itself was branded a terrorist organization, and it was banned underground with a lot of other organizations. It wasn't the only one, but I want to talk about my own organization. Today, this ANC is the ruling party that enjoys the legitimacy what was the last 60, around there percent of South African voters. So to some, it was a terrorist organization, but to the oppressed masses of the people, it was a liberation organization. So it normally depends on which side of the divide you are on. You see, if you are on the part of those that oppose this, you will see it as a terrorist organization or whatever label you want to apply. But if you are on the part of those that are at the receiving, that are at the brand, that that are at the receiving end of whatever brutality or denial of rights or whatever the case may be, you will see them as your liberators. Now, perhaps lastly, honourable members, I think the one thing all of us can agree on, irrespective of on which side of the divide we are, because you see, as political parties, we have our own positions already around these particular matters. We know exactly where the ACPTP stands on this issue, such as the ACTP knows where the ANC stands on this issue. But then as a committee, it is important that everybody, we keep an open mind as members of parliament, and engage on the issues and allow ourselves to be influenced, so that at the end of the day, we have a unified position to the extent that we can as a committee. In terms of how we should approach this matter and what position we should, if any, we should take. And having said that, I think for now,
Lastly, Honorable, this matter was raised with me by, I missed your name, sir. Yes, from the Jewish Board of Deputies, and it was also raised by you now. And that is the fact that this meeting, there was no notice of this meeting in the meetings of committees notice. I want to clarify that indeed, honourable members, in terms of this notice of meetings of the 26th of October, it is indeed there. Yes, it's here. I'll give it to you after this if you want to. It is there. So maybe you haven't seen it. Understandably so, but yes, it was in the notice. Honorable members, let me thank you so much. Thank you very much to our guests. Your inputs are valuable, sirs. May I perhaps berate you for one thing? Please. You see, there's no lady or a woman amongst all of you. Now, we've had four presentations. The ambassador is another case. He's the representative of the country here. But the organizations there. In Xhosa, we say Ngamato Donke, all males. We take this gender issue serious. No, it's fine, you are covered. Yeah, but let me thank you on behalf of the committee for your valuable inputs. We had some inputs from people who think different about this matter in the past, and we're glad that you were here. Gives us perspective. Ambassador, thank you very much, Excellency, for taking off the time. Thank you so much, honorable members. And thank you for the chair.